Hello, everybody. Today is Tuesday, October 15th, 2013, and this is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com. If you haven't been to my website lately, please make sure you do so. There are all kinds of interesting updates going on. Everything from the implant removal process, which is unbelievable and very popular, apparently, amongst all you Starseeds out there. And also, of course, the blog. Oh my gosh, I can't even keep up with the news that's coming out today. And I have a very, very interesting guest with me today, Cynthia Crawford. And you can, if you want to get up on her website while we're speaking, her website is etsculptor.com. That's etsculptor.com. So hello, Cynthia. Thank you for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Hi, Alexandra. I am so honored to be on your show.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm honored to have you on my show. I want everybody to know, Cynthia has a fascinating background. When she and I first met, I was just mesmerized by her sculptures. And she is apparently a twin with a very interesting background, I might add. Her father was, an officer in the OSS, which if anybody doesn't know, that's the Office of Strategic Services. This is kind of like the predecessor of the CIA.
Right? Okay. No, he wasn't an officer. He worked on a project that they were heading that project. So he was in the Army, and being in the Army, many of the people that worked with the OSS had been working in the Army under something else. Like, for example, his job was primarily in to do with Korea and what was Korea.
Okay, so around the 50s then.
He started in the late 40s and then got out of it in the early 50s. So this was when Korean War was kind of peaking.
Yes. Yeah, I can imagine. And, you know, apparently, tell everybody a little bit about your background as far as how you grew up in this kind of environment, because one of the reasons that Cynthia has such a phenomenal gift with her sculpting is that she was continually abducted and had numerous examinations and impregnations. So can you tell us a little bit about your experience with that?
Well, yes. I actually started out when I was quite young, having contact with the beings, but also being taken to underground facilities, military facilities. And being a toddler, was quite terrified when I would find myself waking up and I'm strapped to a type of a stretcher-like thing and being taken into a building that was a military building, that it would go, when the elevator would go downstairs, it went we're talking at least about a dozen floors down at
wow.
the minimum.
Oh, my.
It was rather scary. And I remember they were testing me and trying to have me do certain things. And I never knew. I was very, very sensitive as a child and terrified, too. But I never knew why they were doing this. And when I would try to tell my mom and my dad, especially my mom, because my dad was gone most of my youth. When I say youth, up until I was about, four or five before he got out of the Army. And wasn't able to tell us anything that was going on. But my mother used to always say that I was imagining it.
Wow.
I also, by the way, didn't start speaking sentences until I was about five.
Oh, my. Oh,
so
my.
When I would talk about things, it was very difficult for me to articulate to my mother exactly what was going on.
Well, don't you think that's because you were probably in a state of trauma? I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a horrific time in my life, because my father being in the Army, and anyone that's had a parent that's in the Army knows that when they tell you to be quiet, they'll say things like, especially if I was crying, stop crying now. And if you don't stop crying, I will give you something to cry about. And when we got hit or strapped with a belt by my father, we learned very quickly not to do anything to upset him. So when I would be taken to these underground facilities, they would say to me, they would give me orders, and it made me afraid because my father was the same way.
You know, it's interesting. I'm an Air Force brat, and my father was a fighter pilot. And, you know, the thing that he did in my upbringing was he made it fun. And I didn't really have him, you know, do the lashings or anything like that, unless I really blew it. But, you know, and that was very few and far between. He just would look at you with this look, and he would say, front and center. And we would come, and we would actually have to stand at ease. I mean, it was just crack up. And we kind of giggled about it, and he giggled about it, and he kind of made it fun. But I would imagine that these types of abductions are very common for people that are children of a military, you know, officer or personnel. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I will say this, too, that when I was, from the time I could walk, my mother said that she would wake up in the morning to get us girls up and to give us our breakfast and everything. And most of the time, she didn't know where she was going to find me, because she said a lot of times she'd find me outside, or she'd find me laying by the front door or in a closet or something.
God.
And but when she'd find me outside, she knew that, or this is what she told me, that I was a sleepwalker. But that sleepwalking that she claimed I did continued all the way through high school. And, I mean, it still was beyond, but it wasn't sleepwalking. I mean, most people would say, oh, of course it was sleepwalking. Well, when I would go on the ships, sometimes they didn't always put me back in my bed.
Mm.
And there would be times I would wake up outside, and I would freak out because I didn't know how I got outside. And even as a teenager, I have to say that there would be times when I would be asleep, and the next thing I know is I'm waking up and I'm in the air. I'm looking over the housetops, and I'm going into a light. I'm going into a ship. And I hated having those dreams because I had a terrible fear of heights. And I always thought I was going to fall out of the sky.
Well, not only that, you didn't know what your future was going to be once you got in one of those ships. Did you ever experience the abductions as actually a physical event, or was it definitely the aliens, which it sounds to me like some of them were working with the government, but apparently some of them were not?
Right, and I had twofold. When the Greys would come and get me when I was a little toddler, the Greys would take me out of my bed, and then I would go into a military vehicle and military building.
Wow.
So that was the little Greys that got me. Now, as I also would experience being on ships, most of that occurred when I was in my teens. However, when I was in third grade, my mother and father had split up just as I got out of third grade, and we moved to Omaha, Nebraska. And because I grew up in the South, in Georgia and North Carolina, I had a very, when I finally did start speaking, I spoke with a Southern accent. So living in Omaha, Nebraska, moving there, they said I had a speech impediment and had to go to a special speech therapy class every... Yeah.
That just cracks me up, because I grew up in Georgia. I grew up in North Carolina because they both had bases there. And I had a very strong Southern accent, and my father said, We need to work on this. But I'm It's interesting.
But then when I was in third grade, something happened to me that shook my world, and suddenly I could not connect to reality. So for a long time there, I wasn't able to speak, or I chose not to speak, and I would daydream a lot. And I do remember in third grade, this is a kind of a bad memory, the teacher getting upset with me because she would be asking me questions and I would be like in a trance. And I remember one time that she put her face in my face and something about like slamming her fist down or something and trying to get me to answer her. And I freaked out because I wasn't, you know, consciously there. And I freaked out and I slapped her.
Oh, my God.
I know. And I then got up on a ledge. And I don't know how high up. We were probably on the second floor, maybe the third floor of the school. Got up on the ledge and was going to jump off the ledge.
Oh, my God. And she stopped you or?
Yeah, but it was like there was something else stopping me, too. And I was put back a year then because they said I had mental problems, which I really did for two reasons. Well, probably for more than two reasons. One was because my mom and dad had just gone through a divorce.
I was just going to say that.
Or were getting a divorce. And secondly, because something had happened that was even more painful than that. And I couldn't remember, but I felt alone. And then it wasn't until I became an adult that it dawned on me what it was. While I was talking, it just kind of hit me. I was on a ship, and I was told that they were not going to come for me for a while, that I could not see them for a while. And the fear of not seeing them, the people on the ship, threw me into a severe depression.
Oh, I bet. And, you know, it's funny, Cynthia, there's quite a few of us that have those types of memories that are starting to surface more so now than ever before.
Oh, yeah. Because I never felt I belonged on Earth. Earth did not feel comfortable to me. It wasn't so much Earth as it was humans.
Exactly.
And I was so afraid of humans, and there was just something that didn't feel right. I never felt love. And everyone I've talked to that have had conscious memory of being with their star family say that it is a love that is beyond explanation. It is so complete, so fulfilling, so all that is. That's all I can say is it's just all that is, that love that we have with our star family, that when suddenly we feel we're going to be without it, it is the only stability we have in our life to connect us, to keep us going. So I went without the feeling of love for many, many years before I began having contact with them again.
God, that's so profoundly put. I congratulate you for articulating it that way, because I don't think I could have done it any better. It seems as if we've been walking around in a fog down here, you know, supposedly being the ground crew, if you want to call it that, and just craving for that connection again, you know. And do you feel that you're now reuniting with your star family and your soul family here on Earth?
Oh, my gosh. You know something? I got to tell you, Alexandra, that I have spent most of my life feeling like I don't want to be here. But I felt like there was a reason for me being here, because every single time something happened where I should have died, I've had such incredible, miraculous healings. And oh, gosh, it was so hard to be here. And then when I finally started having conscious contact when I was in my 40s and then began making the sculptures, oh, my word, How do you explain it when you start connecting with your star family on Earth? That's what I began finding. People that would contact me to get sculptures, I would feel like, oh my God, my family is here on Earth. And that's the way I feel about those people that I've made connection to. It is like, I'm finally okay now. I can do my mission. I can complete my mission because our star family knows who we are and what we have to do, and we're powerful together.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I'm appalled at how much our lives parallel, because my journey very much started in my 40s with the accident I had, and that's when I really started making contact. And it was at that point that I lost that constant feeling of being so lonely and being so, you know, even though I was gregarious and, you know, could be the life of the party, I still felt so alone on this planet.
Oh, yes. But how do you feel now that you've met many of your stars?
Uh-oh. Are you there?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah, how do you feel now that you've met a lot of your star family?
I feel 100,000% better. I mean, I feel like I'm on track. I'm pursuing my mission. I'm much more goal-oriented with what I really align with my total soul and being. You know, I mean, I want to get up in the morning. I'm here because I'm on fire to serve humanity. And I know people don't like to use the word serve, but whatever. I'm here to assist. And the greatest thing I can do each day is just the fulfillment of knowing that I impacted someone somewhere, somehow, from stepping forward and becoming who they really are and being empowered.
Oh my God. Absolutely. About 4 years ago, I started actually making these sculptures in 2003, but about 4 years ago, I got this phone call from a woman who said, I don't go out. I go to the store when I have to, but I don't want to be around humans. And she didn't want me to know too much about her because she didn't really belong here, she said. But she said, I don't like the feeling of when she could read people's minds and she could feel their negativity, their deception. But then she also felt the love from some people that were genuine. But when she read or had heard about me and then went online and saw my sculptures, and she said, I'm contacting you. This is probably the one and only time I'll ever contact you. But I was not born on this earth. I am not of this earth. But I am here for the event that is about to, that will be taking place in the near future. And she said, I have a hard time just being out there. And I told this woman, I said, you know, there are others of us on this planet too. But we have to be out there, for we cannot assist humanity. We cannot do our work if we allow ourselves to be afraid of them.
Gosh, Cynthia, it's so true. And also, we need to be networked together.
Absolutely.
We are too scattered and too fragmented as a whole, whatever you want to call yourself, light worker, light work warrior, star seed, indigo, crystal child, whatever you want to call yourself. We need to reunite, because we are so powerful, and it is us that is making the difference. Yes, the masses are waking up, but it is us that are blazing the trail.
Absolutely. We have a lot of work to do very soon. But the other thing I have to tell you was, when I started making these sculptures, a lot of times I didn't know what I was going to make. I would start sculpting what I thought in my head was a being, and then the next thing I know, I would go into a trance, and then I would come out of the trance and I had created a sculpture unlike anything I'd ever seen or remembered seeing.
Wow.
And the interesting thing about it was when I, after about a year or two of making these sculptures, it was so much work. It's so much harder because I'm not allowed to do like an, what do they call that, you know, to manufacture them where they automatically come off a line. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes. Where you're just, you know, basically cookie cutting them.
Right. I have to work hands-on with these sculptures, and some of these sculptures take a minimum of 4 hours, and most of them will take anywhere from 5 to even, I've worked as long as 8 hours on a sculpture. So when you see the prices on the sculptures, it's very, very low for all the hours I work on these sculptures. But it's not about the money.
Right.
It's about what these sculptures are almost like picking up the telephone and having a direct connection to your star family. And it's not like you're going to pick up the sculpture and go, hello there. You know, I'm here. Anybody there?
But, yeah, I noticed that supposedly when people have them, their vibratory rate changes, their temperature of their body changes.
Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. In fact, less than a month ago, I was in Alabama. And I have to be honest with you, Alabama was not a place I was looking forward to going.
I'm sorry. I've been there many times.
Yeah. And so I thought, I had a few friends of mine say, are you crazy? They're going to crucify you on the cross,
big
girl. You got to be nuts for going there. And I said, no. You know, this woman came to visit me because she had heard a talk I had given on the internet, and she insisted that she and her friend wanted to meet me, and I agreed to. And then she said, well, now would you come to Alabama if I set something up for you, if I set up a conference? And I said, well, sure I would, right, if you can set up a conference. Well, but I told her, I said, you know, I can't afford to pay my own way out there and all the expenses to set this up, so you would have to do all the work yourself. Well, interestingly enough, we had many, during the 2 months it took to set this up, maybe even 3 months, there were people that were excited about coming to it and others that wanted to come but were kind of iffy. And then there was another thing going on at the same time that I was there, and it was a psychic there.
Oh, God.
So I, you know, it was on and off, and I told my guides, I said, look, you know, I really don't want to go to Alabama, so maybe kind of like, you know, give her a pat on the back, say, great job at another time, you know. My guides wouldn't listen to me. Instead, they put it together, and even though there were only 30 people that showed up, about 30 people total were there in the room, let me tell you, when they walked in that room, it was like seeing my fellow star people from the ships walking
wow.
in the room. And the other thing that happened was I got not one order for sculptures for 3 weeks. And I said to my guys, I go, okay, you guys, you know, I have to pay my bills because I spend all my time working on these sculptures and I can't go out and get a job because I can't do both. So, you know, I need some orders if I'm going to pay my bills. And they said to me, when you have made enough sculptures that need to be in Alabama, you will start getting your orders. So I'm working like crazy, and I finally decided, because I had to carry these on the plane.
Oh, God.
I know. And so I'm going, oh, this is going to be a heavy load. So I only took 17 sculptures with me.
Only 17.
Yeah. And only one did not sell. But this is the interesting thing. I thought I was only going to be talking for like about two and a half hours. It was an all-day conference.
Oh,
we took two breaks, and that was it.
That's great news.
Yeah, and when I was done, if you want to know how awesome these people were, as soon as I was done talking, they went to the table where the sculptures were, and immediately, now that day it had been kind of cool because it had been rainy, and it was in the 70s. Immediately as they went up to look at the sculptures, the temperature rose so much that everyone around there began dripping with sweat. You can tell they were active, and some people's hands would start vibrating, holding the sculptures. These sculptures were so intent in connecting to their star family that they didn't waste any time connecting.
That's incredible. So, like, I mean, is this something that, like, you know, the moment they take it out of the box, it's just like they're online, so to speak, with the sculptor itself?
Well, you know, it used to be that we had plenty of time for them to acclimate and to also work with their DNA changes, excepting there are some people, and it's always been this way, there are some people that will start vibrating immediately or within 30 days go on the ships or within 30 days have some kind of contact. But the average person, it could take anywhere from 30 days to 6 months before they would actually have connection.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, I thought these sculptures were supposed to be really doing their power. Why is it taking so long? And it was because many of the star seeds had been so brainwashed by humanity that they lost their power. And so their DNA had to be activated. Well, now when I'm making these sculptures, they don't have time to waste. They need to immediately get them going. So instantly now people begin heating up, because when they heat up, it is a connection that they're making. And when they start feeling the vibration, their DNA is being activated. They are being opened up and brought to that point. I even had one of the women that attended the meeting there in Alabama was a retired nun.
Oh, wow.
I know. And she said, you know, Cynthia, I came there to listen to you talk. She said, after I retired from being a nun, I started hearing these, you know, I had these voices that were talking to me about other things and telling me the truth about our true connection with the Creator Source and our true abilities and so forth, and how, and I hate saying this, but how religion controls humans.
Absolutely.
And she said, when she learned the true connection with God, life changed. But she said she came to listen to me talk, and she was not going to get a sculpture. And she brought no money with her. And so she said, just to make sure she didn't buy a sculpture. And she, when everybody got up to look at the sculptures, she went over there, and she said she just wanted to look at them. And all of a sudden, she's getting this telepathic communication with one of the sculptures, and it happened to be the master teacher. And the master teacher is the one with the white face, the white beard, and wears a black hooded robe. Mm-hmm. And many people have experienced him, and those people are extremely, extremely spiritual, and they have helped guide them through things. And in fact, I've met people that have become reverends or ministers and have started their own centers of spiritual living, not religious living, but spiritual living and so forth. But anyway, she said that this sculpture immediately started speaking to her, and she's, and it says to her, well, what are you going to do? And she said, she's thinking, it's talking to me. Kind of shocked. And she goes, what do you mean? And she said, he's tapping his foot. And I said, well, he had a long robe on. I didn't really put feet on. And she goes, well, he's tapping his foot. And I go, okay. He's tapping his foot. Go ahead.
Oh, that's so funny.
He says, are you going to take me home or what? And she says, well, am I supposed to? And he doesn't say a thing to her. So she picks him up and she says, turns to me and says, I need to get this one, but I brought no money with me. And I said, take it home. Send me a check. I gave her my card with my address on it. I said, just send me a check when you get home. That's all. So she calls me up 2 days after I got back from Alabama and says, now I need to tell you what happened. So she told me that story about how it talked to her. And then all the way home, it was talking to her.
Wow.
In the car as she drove from Alabama to Georgia, where she lives. Now, interestingly, She also was a woman who has had many illnesses, has not been very well. And I guess when you get up in your high 70s, between 75 and 80, you have your aches and pains, and you sometimes wonder, okay, how long am I going to have to be here because this is getting painful?
Right.
So she said to me the very next morning after she got home with her sculpture, she said, I woke up, and she said, I think that this being has healed me because I've never felt this good. I haven't felt this good since I was young.
Oh, that's fabulous. That is so fabulous. I mean, what a cool experience. So this started when you were in your 40s.
Yeah, having conscious contact, it started in my 40s, but I didn't start making the sculptures until I was in my 50s.
Ah, okay.
And I mean, I'm 64 now. So I've been making them since 2003, and I tried to stop making them after a couple years, and they came to me. Well, actually, I'm going to tell you one of the stories that's going to blow your mind. I asked them because I was making them out of clay and making originals, and what happened was a guy called me who had bought three originals, and a woman had been on pain medication, and he had these on pillars in his house and with lights above them, like you would see in an art gallery.
Yeah.
And she was on crutches and on painkillers, and she lost her footing, and like the domino effect fell into one, and the other one fell into the other, and so forth. Well, I think all three of them broke. Well, when you have a clay sculpture, sometimes clay sculptures, when they hit hard enough, especially when you've got tile floor, there are so many pieces that it's worse than putting a puzzle together. And most of the time, you cannot even glue them back together because sometimes they even shatter in places where they're a little bit thinner than others. So I asked my guides. I said, oh, wow, I can't be doing this. I can't be selling them and having this happen to them. So I said, what can I do? So they told me they had to be made out of natural material. So they showed me a material, and so I went, and I make them out of hydrocal. So in order to make them out of hydrocal, I make a form where I pour the hydrocal, liquid hydrocal, into a rubber mold, and then I do hands-on for hours where I sculpt the details, the features, and the arms, everything detailed into it. Then I have to sand it down, and if there's something that's not right, then I have to rebuild it and fix it, do whatever I have to do to make them look as good as I can possibly make them. And then I do several different types of coats of paint on them. Anyway, so this one particular time I had made a mold of I think it was the Andromedan. Yes, it was the Andromedan adult. And it was causing me to work 6 hours on the head when it would come out of the mold. And I thought, well, I'll just pour it and it'll turn out perfect. And all I have to do is paint it then. Well, they wouldn't allow it. And I got really upset. And I said to my guides, I said, that's it. I'm done. I'm not making these anymore. And so I decided, okay, I will make a second mold. So I threw the first mold away. It had been literally, the mold had been picked up from in the trash out to a dump. And, you know, the dumps here, every time the trash is put in the dump, they have to cover it up with dirt and so forth like that. So I had made another mold, and the second mold was worse than the first. And it was causing me to work 10 hours on this mold. I just started crying, and I said, that's it, I'm done. I will never make another sculpture, and don't you bug me again about making your sculptures. I won't do it. And the next morning I woke up, and I went out in my garage where I kept the molds at that time, went out in my garage to do something, and there on the table, completely cleaned up, was the mold I had thrown away a week before that had already been buried.
No way.
Oh, yeah. And that's when I knew I had to do them. And then I tried a second time to quit making them, and they said to me, they got mad at me, and they go, they took me into the etheric realm and scolded me. And they said, you cannot quit making these sculptures. You agreed before you came to Earth that you would help awaken the star seeds and to help them have contact again and remember their star family. You agreed to do this. You cannot stop. And then when they told me that, I said, oh my God, you mean it really is important? Well, if it's that important, I'm not going to quit. So I've never quit.
That's incredible. I so relate to your story because, you know, I started, I don't know if you'd use the word channeling because that's really not the right word, but I started receiving all of this information about my alchemy when I started making essences. And this is after I had a really, really like horrific car accident. And
yes,
it was the same kind of thing. It was, you know, I must have spent, I mean, I'm not kidding. I was so consumed with what I did and I loved what I did that, I mean, we're talking thousands of hours of just playing and making and bugging everybody that was my friend and saying, can I try this on you? Can I try that on you? You know, let me make this tincture for you, you know? And I remember just getting to a point where I was frustrated one day because I was working on people that were on, you know, 17 pharmaceutical drugs and really had not done any inner work, and they didn't notice any difference at all. But yet there were other people, you know, that were like profoundly affected by the remedies. And I finally just one day said, you know, I'm obviously failing. I don't know what I'm doing. And, da, 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 da. And I finally got the same similar type of message that you did, which is, you know, hey, these people are so there's so much density because of all the programming.
Yeah.
You know, and all the toxicity in the body and da 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 da. And I'm like, okay. So I God, it's so funny. Our lives are, I mean, I've talked to you quite a few times, but I never realized how paralleled our lives are.
Yeah. Actually, when you were telling me that about how you got this information downloaded to you, that was the information that is that connection from your soul, from this container to being on the ships and also being on your planets, because where we come from, we live with nothing but natural stuff. I just spoke to a man yesterday who said that he's been doing a similar thing that you do, but he's been doing it for himself only. And he said, you know, he didn't know if he was a starseed or what. And I said, you're not doing it by accident. You're remembering the way we live, where we come from. We live with nature. That which grows naturally is our cure and our belief and our power. And everything boils down to believing. When we believe, we can make things happen. Because as soon as we say, well, I'm afraid I'm not going to have contact, we have sabotaged ourselves. So we have to believe. Those people that were not cured by your product, what happened was they had already agreed to whatever lessons they needed or agreed to having that experience. Or maybe, like I've known people that have had, they could have been cured of cancer very easily, but the thing was, they had agreed when they were going to leave, and they, therefore, regardless of what they did, they left. Now, one woman literally was given only a matter of hours to live, and all of a sudden, she was completely healed, and a light came into her room. While she was literally hooked up to all the machines and everything, a light came into her room and overwhelmed her, and she was completely healed of cancer, and the doctors could not find any sign of cancer. And she said, I always said I believe. About 3 or 4 months later, all of a sudden, in one day, her cancer came back, and she died within days.
Oh, wow. Why?
Because it was her time, and this is what my heart was broken, and I thought, well, what's wrong with this? You know, why did she go? Because here she, why would you heal her and then have her go? And it was because she had still people to give the message to. Her mission, her job was done.
Good point. Well, now you mentioned before, I have a couple questions kind of going backwards a bit. You mentioned before that you're a hybrid.
Yeah.
Why, what is important about that in the work that you do?
Wow. You know, there's many, many hybrids. People don't realize this, but I get calls and emails from people all the time who are also hybrids. So there's different ways of being hybrids. We all are star seeds because we all are one with the Creator Source. But my being a hybrid was a manipulation by the government. The government was trying at that time, they had been working with German scientists because the Germans had since before 1915, somewhere around 1915 when they were contacted by some of the beings and they were taught how to create hybrids, cloning, and things like this. So during the war, World War II, actually, there were around 4,000 clones that came marching into this one town where there were not that many soldiers, and they just came marching in their German uniforms. So when we won the war, it was the German scientists that came over on a top-secret project to create hybrids.
Yeah, I was familiar with the German scientists, but I wasn't familiar that they were doing just that much focus on the hybrids themselves.
Oh, like, my gosh. Yeah, actually, a person that had would go over to Germany and work a lot on projects with different manufacturing companies where they were building large plants and all that, happened into a certain library where a lot of this documentation of what they were doing was there. He even got a video that he was not supposed to get, and as long he rented it and he made copies of it and didn't tell them. Wow. Anyway.
That's a whole other story.
I know. And I don't want to get any in trouble. So I'll say this. I had the video, a copy of the video, which was very, very poor quality by the time it had been duplicated several times. So I knew certain things. So yes, there were things that our governments have done things, like our government has been doing time travel since the 1930s, but did not perfect it until the 1960s.
Yes, yes.
So they have gone into the future, which leads us to another thing about the men in black. The men in black are from our future.
What?
They are the ones that are from the future, that are here to change things. The men in black have come from our future, and they have come here to change. They know which people, hybrids, star seeds, people are on this planet to assist humanity, because in the future, humanity has become the slaves, and they have lost their emotions. And the men in black are the ones that were some of the first that were created and hybridized to hybridize out emotions. So the men in black are here to keep humanity from changing, because then their power, they will no longer exist in the future.
God, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you for that. That makes
And
a
there are
lot
a
of
few
sense.
of these men in black that are have broken off and know what has happened in the future. So they have come through to assist some of us light workers to help us to make sense, of what the importance of our mission is. So it is important that we understand people have been working in the light in many, many ways. That program that has been on TV, and I encourage anyone and everyone to at least watch as much of Fringe that they can.
Yeah,
and
I like that show.
The last two seasons have been some of their most powerful. And I was blown away when I was watching. I'm going, oh my God, because I have been contacted by the Men in Black. They have drugged me. The government and the Men in Black have tried to take me out because they knew that I was important to awakening and getting this group of light workers to remember what they're here for and to help them get on the bandwagon and get it going. So when I saw this Fringe thing, because a friend of mine had seen it, a good friend of mine, and had told me, she goes, oh, Cynthia, you should be watching Fringe. And I'm going, I don't watch TV, you know. So I was watching it. And so then I asked my guides. I went into meditation one night, and I said, this feels very similar, like there's something important I need to know. What is it about Fringe? Is this true? And, oh, my God, my guides took me into the future. They even took me into other worlds, and they showed me Fringe carries a lot of truth. So people, watch at least the last two seasons of Fringe. It makes sense. What is happening now to people contacting me is they are now moving between dimensions.
Absolutely.
So anyway, that what's happening to me now is with all of the people contacting me, we are being told it's important now that we believe more than ever in our powers, and we believe in our connection with the source. We believe in unconditional love, and that we empower ourselves with love. And when I have been attacked by some of the dark forces trying to take me out and to stop me from my work, I have learned, even dark attachments, I know some people say, well, if a dark attachment has gotten on you, you must have gone to the dark. No, and it's not true. It is our challenge to prove that we are in our power. So we will be challenged by the dark. And what I finally learned to do was, even when the dark attachments got on me and tried to drop me to my knees, and they were even destroying some of my sculptures that were supposed to go out, I literally had to love them so much. And I would, when they would glom onto my back, I would turn around and I would say, thank you for showing me my weakness, for now I know where I need to be the strongest. And I would imagine myself pulling the attachment around to my heart, and I would hold them to my heart, and I would love them. And the other thing I did, I would say, if you are not of the Christ consciousness, then you must leave. And if you do not leave, then I will take you to the light where you can transmute those heavy, dark energies into light and loving energies.
Nice. Well, and I think right now we are all being called to really step into our power. And this is challenging for every single one of us because of the programming we've received. We're constantly doubting our abilities. We're constantly doubting, well, you know, am I clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient, whatever it is, We are, we just may not remember it. And that disconnection's been so severe and for so long that it is our job right now to investigate or review or really believe that any of the other star seeds around us, they're no better than us. They're just here to assist you to get to where you
absolutely
need to be.
It's a time to step in our power, and we step in our power through believing and through love and light, and also through understanding that Christ consciousness is not about religion. It's about being able to honor every single person on this planet and throughout the universe for whatever lessons they have chosen to learn in their life, and to give up greed, judgment, prejudice, fear, all those feelings, and to transmute any negative feelings we have into unbelievable love, to the most powerful, unconditional love. And we also have to understand, my beings told me one other thing that was really important for me to learn, and this was when I would say, people would say to me, well, you know, you need to forgive those people that have hurt you in your past. My guide said to me, you are beyond forgiveness. For forgiveness connotates that something bad has been done to you, when all of the things you agreed to before you came to Earth were lessons you chose to learn. You then transmute or change the meaning from, or the words from, forgive to thank you. And they say, no longer say, I forgive you for what you did to me. You say, I thank you for agreeing to participate in the lesson I chose.
Ooh, I really like that, because unfortunately the word forgiveness connotates that you're in a subservient sort of position as far as being of sin or being less than, or, you know, because a lot of times when we say we're sorry, we're doing so because we're so conscientious about the other person's feelings when we really didn't intend for that to
occur.
So I really like that. Well, listen, it's already at the top of the hour. I cannot believe how fast time's flown. But Cynthia, I just really wanted to thank you for coming on the show and enlightening us with your work that you're doing for humanity. And do me a favor and give everybody, any other information they need to have to contact you if they're interested in getting their own personal sculptures.
Regardless if you want a sculpture or you just want to talk and to know who you are, to have any kind of assistance that I can give you, write to me. My email address is Cynthia T, that's T as in Tom, Cynthia T Crawford. So the last name spelled C-R-A-W-F-O-R-D. So it's Cynthia T. Crawford at etsculptor.com. And the E-T Sculptor is spelled E-T-S-C-U-L-P-T-O-R.com.
Perfect. Okay, well, thank you, lady. I appreciate your time. And thanks, everybody out there, for your support and love. And please consider donating to Galactic Connection. It is a free service to humanity, and it is a lot of work. I want to thank everybody for all the incredibly uplifting emails. It keeps me going with the amount of hours I'm putting in. Thank you. Keep them coming in. And I love you all. We will be seeing some phenomenal things soon. Let's hope soon is like really soon, but we don't know when. And I wish you all good day and blessings. And Cynthia,
thank you.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.